Hi, and welcome to That Other Gaming Podcast, where we take a look behind the scenes of virtual reality, online gaming, streaming, and more. I'm Lisa, a tech comms manager at Meta and recovering academic.
And I'm David, a fellow tech comms manager here at Meta, a full-time nerd and lifelong gamer obsessed with the future of video games. So what have you been playing this week?
I have been playing a little bit of Chicken Jump on my mobile phone. And then I also started replaying Batman the Telltale series as well on the Switch.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I had started that one a while ago, like several years back when we first had kids, and never finished playing through. So picked it back up and I'm really excited to get through it.
I noticed that The Wolf Among Us Part 2 just came out. So
did it.
Yeah, Telltale is officially back, I guess. You know, I mean, to whatever that means these days, because as you know, they were dissolved and a lot of the original developers moved on. So I think it's all new team members now. But yeah, they have a continuation of their original IP, The Wolf Among Us. And I've heard good things about it. So maybe worth checking out.
I played through The Wolf Among Us in its entirety. That was a great one. I wasn't a huge fan of Fable, the graphic novel series that it's based on, but really thoroughly enjoyed the game. So I'll have to pick that up when I'm done with Batman.
Yeah, I still need to play the first one. I really would like to. And my wife is a big Disney fan, so all the fairy tales, she's familiar with the characters. It would be cool to see, you know, like a new take on all those characters and stuff. So that'll be one that maybe we'll play whenever, you know, the new baby's here and we have a lot of downtime.
Yeah.
For me, it's mostly been more Zenith still. I'm almost at end game. I'm level 30. The level cap is 40. So I'm nearly there. The newest patch has added a lot of extra content, a lot of new quest givers, and a lot of new types of quests in the game now that kind of add more content and meat to some of the zones that were a little more empty. And outside of VR, I've been playing Cyberpunk 2077 because that just got its next-gen update. So I originally reviewed that game for Android Central back in the day in my former life as a journalist. I played it on Stadia back then. And it was always a game that I wanted to play on like a dedicated piece of hardware. And so now that it finally has official, you know, 4K, 60 frame per second support on Xbox Series X and PS5, I'm going to finally replay it. And so I just started. Oh, it's gorgeous. It was well worth the update. If you haven't played, highly, highly recommend it. And you can buy it for PS4 or Xbox One and you get a free upgrade. So if you find it cheap somewhere, a disc or whatever, highly recommend it. It's a phenomenal game. Some of the best writing I've seen in a game in a while. It got a lot of hate at first because of all the bugs. But man, the storytelling is incredible. And some of the characters are just fantastic. It's a really good game.
Yeah, there's a documentary out on YouTube about its initial release that has a lot of gameplay recordings from the initial release. And it's well worth watching if you haven't checked it out already. But yeah, definitely the graphics of that game are just phenomenal. So glad to hear it's living up to the original hype.
And if you have a capable PC, there is a VR mod. I haven't tried it, but that does exist. So there's that too.
Cool. So today's episode is about how creatives find processes that work best for them in game development, and their often circuitous routes through their careers before they land in game dev, and also kaiju games.
Everyone loves a good kaiju game. You know, speaking of weird games, what's some of the weirdest, most bizarre gaming experiences that you've ever had? I know in a previous episode you mentioned Octodad, which totally fits the mold there, but what else really sticks out to you in your years of playing games?
Yeah, Octodad, definitely a silly one that fits the mold. But for this, I think I'm going to have to go with Sims, Sarah is Missing.
I've never heard of it.
It's a mobile game that is all about interacting with the world through your phone. You get voicemails from other NPCs. You can make calls to NPCs. You use like the photo app and you send photos. But it's very, very bizarre. There's some like cult stuff in there towards the end. Don't want to give anything away, but small indie project. It's really well done, but very, very bizarre. How about you?
I'll give two answers. One is one that a lot of people have probably heard of. It's called Her Story. That one is a really interesting game where it has you kind of combing through archived interrogation footage of a woman that's at a police station, and you only can find the footage by typing in keywords into the database. The flow of it is, you know, you watch one of her clips of an interview and she maybe mentioned something. So you type it in the database, it pulls up other videos, and it kind of just takes on a breadcrumb trail. And everyone's path through the game is always going to be different because of what they decide to search. So there's only like one true thing that happened. You know, there's only one truth to find, but everyone finds it in a different way. So it kind of colors your interpretation of it in different ways, which I just think it's so interesting the way they did that. And it's all live action stuff. So it's like real, you know, interrogation of an actual actress talking. And the other one is a much sillier game. And this is Butts, the VR Experience.
Oh, is that Tyler Hurd?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. That was actually on my short list too. I'm glad one of us used it.
Yeah, that was, I don't think it's on Quest, but I know it's on Rift, Go, Gear VR, Steam. It's on pretty much every other headset, and it's hilarious. That was one of the first VR things I showed my nephew. I think he was like 12 years old at the time, and he just fell over laughing. It's a silly song with these, you know, kind of animated characters and weird, creepy, smiley faces. And if you like butt jokes and farting jokes and stuff, then you'll probably appreciate it. I mean, it's such a good time. It's so silly. Very psychedelic, too.
Yes. Yeah, there's two or three Tyler Hurd experiences on Rift. Sadly, not on Quest, to the best of my knowledge, but there's always Airlink if folks want to check it out. But he can do no wrong.
I think he's working on a new one with Wii VR that's supposed to be coming to newer headsets soon.
Very exciting.
I'm super excited about our guest this week, Simon Kubash of Fire Punch Games. You might have heard of their mobile game Chicken Jump because you just mentioned it, but also their upcoming VR title, Tentacular, published by Devolver Digital, is coming out later this year.
So I've been checking out Chicken Jump to get ready for the interview. I sat down with Simon to talk about his journey as he shifted away from photography and how he originally got into game development as a kid. He actually developed his very first game on a Commodore VIC-20 back in 1984. So, So Tentacular, this wild upcoming VR game, it draws inspirations ranging from Octodad, again, to Bridge Builder. And so had a lovely chat with Simon. Let's cue that up. Well, hi, Simon. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Really, really appreciate it. To get us started, if you could just tell us a little bit about your background and what got you into game development originally.
I got into game development because I was such a big fan of video games as a kid. Mm-hmm. My parents gave me a VIC-20 like sometime back in the 80s. I immediately got started trying to do basic programming and making games. That was my passion back then, and I kept going for a while. After that, I started studying photography. So I went away a bit from digital because it was still in the time where it had like real film and paper. When I went to California to study photography there, I met Eric Martin, who's my tutor and my teacher. And he was running the digital lab at CalArts. Mm-hmm. And he really got me back into like digital media and games and interactive development. And yeah, that's when I turned back to computer games. And when I got back from the United States, like four friends, we've started a company, a digital media company in the early internet days, doing advertisement for brands like Nutella and BMW and things like that. And I always pushed for doing advert games and tried to get into gaming, but we never managed to make a spin-off, you know, like to make a real game company. So we kept going. But after a while, I burned out and I took a break. I took some time to think and I said, okay, now I want to develop games. And that's when we started to make Tentacular.
You mentioned the Commodore VIC-20, I think it was, that was your first computer. Would love to hear about the first game that you ever made and what that was like.
I'm not sure which one was the first one, but I don't know if you know this, the arcade game Moon Patrol. You drive with like a moon buggy and you have to jump and shoot. And it was like a very bad ripoff of that game. Every level was just using video game characters from that era. So it was like a Pac-Man, you know, level.
Oh, cool.
You know, a little kid trying to make fan art in a way, fan games. It was crazy because it was so empowering back then, you know, to be able to get a computer and make those games. That was really mind-blowing for me as a kid.
Very cool. So you've worked on mobile games, augmented reality apps, virtual reality, and more. What are some of the best practices that you think translate really well across platforms? And then in what ways do you see them diverge from each other?
That's a really tough question, I think, because I'm just really into like game feel and how interactions feel and, you know, what you get from doing the things in games, you know, the interactions, how stuff behaves. And to be honest, I guess the DNA of our company is very like game jammy. It's not very thought out, but very like hands-on, trying to create prototypes, trying to find like interesting mechanics. I don't really think I have a good, you know, a good vision what translates very well. For us, it's always what feels good in the respective, you know, in the respective platform, and then to go from there.
Yeah, I know you mentioned game jams with your mobile game Chicken Jump. I think you participated in quite a few game jams with that one. Is that right?
It was created in like an 8-hour game jam. In Berlin, there's like a really nice indie community, and there's a weekly 8-hour mini jam, which is really cool because you try to create a game in 8 hours and then, you know, like it has to work or not. Mm-hmm. And the Smolai game was created in those 8 hours. And then we kept working, you know, from that basis, and turned it into like a real mobile game.
Cool. So as an indie developer, how do you balance doing what you love versus doing what the market will support?
Since like this company was, you know, was basically founded on this idea of getting away from business in a way, because after I quit with the agency, I just really wanted to get back into doing something I really liked. And so we basically started also with a game jam with Tentacular, and started with a VR game jam and tried to get a feel, you know, for the new media. It was, I think, 2016 when, you know, the first devices came out. It was very much in the beginning about just really fun and trying to find out what's possible with this new hardware and with this new technology. The business was at least at first an afterthought. We applied for like a German grant. We got the funding, and then we had to start to think what could be feasible financially and where's the market. But the basis again was all, what can be conceived would be the most fun interaction we can think of. In this case, having tentacles, you know, and, starting a game that's about tentacles. It's very iterative process and not very business driven, to be honest.
Let's take a step back. Let's talk about Tentacular. How would you describe that game to someone who wasn't already familiar with it?
It's about a friendly, gigantic beast trying to fight its place in the world. So just a very playful like experience about being super big and being able to manipulate everything in this very playful game world and to tinker with everything and construct and destroy, interact with the world.
And what was the original inspiration behind the game?
We started at this game jam. We started with this idea of, let's make a game of Boule, you know, like Pétanque, the game with the steel balls where you try to throw stuff mm-hmm. as close as possible, like golf or something like that. But then we kind of went further and said, why shouldn't you be a giant? And then somebody said, let's use tentacles. And then we just went from there to like this idea of, you know, being a giant with tentacles, because we realized that it's really fun to have those extensions on the controller and to manipulate the world in a completely different way than, you know, you're used to. And then we took some steps back and thought, that's not really enough to carry a whole game. And then we went off into different directions. And at the end, we realized, it's not fun to be like a giant that destroys things, because there's so little like possibility space if you can't interact with the world around, you know, with the people, with the citizens.
What were some of your influences? I know on the website you mentioned Octodad, Bridge Builder, and Lego, but curious if there's anything else.
I was really impressed by games like Super Hot, which is a game where you basically, you kind of dance, you do capoeira with your body, you know, moving. And I really liked this idea of having to move your body in order to play. And just in terms of like interaction in Tentacular, since the tentacles are physically based, you know, you have to really... If you carry something heavy, you have to raise your arm very high, and it's a very physical experience to play it. And it requires some, you know, dexterity to grab things, to put them in a certain place. But in terms of like mechanics, we also went from a very like open game idea of, okay, you can place things, you know, you can stack stuff, you can build things, mm-hmm. into a more story-based approach where you say, okay, this is all fine, but there's so much more in this little world, and there's so much more we can tell with the interaction between the people and the player and the monster, that we went off in this direction of creating a whole story, a world, and like a backstory for the monster.
Tell me a little bit about the development process. Are there any fun anecdotes to share? Anything that really stands out or jumps out from the game's history thus far?
There's so much little funny stories and chaos involved, but the thing that's also like the most scary is that the tentacles are really, they're really fragile in a way. They're like the technical construct of the physics can really explode any minute. So we always, for us, it's always just like, oh my God, will this explode? Will it, you know, will they work? And when we started to develop, like Luca, my friend and coworker, who's like the other half of the core team, when Lucas started with the tentacles, he posted GIFs of what happened, and they used to like, either they would explode, you know, they would just flow and melt. So it took like loads of iterations to just get them working. And I'm pretty sure that the way we use them is more of like a bug in the physics system than an actual feature that's meant to be used like that. So let's hope.
Oh, really?
Yeah, let's hope they stay intact.
And how did you decide to bring Tentacular to virtual reality? Why did you decide that was the right medium to tell this particular story and have these mechanics?
The original like technical prototype was started in this game jam. This was a VR game jam. So we, you know, tried to come up with something we could do in those 24 hours in VR, because we just had these new headsets and we're totally, you know, amazed and totally excited about this new technology. We wanted to do a VR game. But then after, when we thought about, you know, where to go with that game, some games back then were adversarial, where you are a monster and you, you know, basically destroy everything or you fight. But that was just too little to do in terms of gameplay and depth, because you are confined to being enemies with humans or with the environment. So we quickly decided that we wanted to have like a friendly relationship, have a lighthearted approach, and have a fun environment and world.
I think it's really interesting, this idea that like VR is such a heavily embodied medium, but then the fact that you have these tentacle arms is so outside of what's expected and the norm that I think it must put you in a really interesting headspace as you interact with the world. So can't wait to get my hands on it, or my tentacles, so to speak.
It's interesting that you can really get good at using the tentacles. There's a lot of dexterity involved, and you can train, you can use them, and you can do crazy things after a while. In the beginning, of course, you feel like, oh, what's going on? You know, like, what is this? I can't do anything.
Right.
After a moment, you realize, oh, this, you can really do intricate things. And it's also, I guess, one of the cute and beautiful moments is then when you realize, oh, I can pick up this little human, you know, with one of my suckers. And then I want to be really careful, or maybe not, you know, I want to hurt the humans, stuff like that. So it's like, you can also decide, you know, to be like a bad tentacle in a way.
Yeah.
But when we demoed the game, people were usually more afraid of hurting the little people than really wanting to hurt them. It kind of conveys this feeling of being protective of the little people of the world.
Speaking of demoing the game, what's the best or the funniest or the most unexpected reaction that you've seen from early players?
We couldn't demo the game so much because of the pandemic. So we only had one public event. It was really cool to see that people really cared for the little humans. I was just saying that they really were like afraid of, oh no, I hit them. I'm so sorry. And people were really, you know, like saying they're sorry and trying to be really careful of the people. And one tester at one moment in the game, which is really fairly early in the game, where you have to get off your bandages because you're hurt. They couldn't do what was supposed to be done because they were so afraid of doing it. So they're so immersed in the game of being afraid to do what they would have to do, which is to put, I can't say it. Sorry.
No spoilers. So the original song is just amazing. If listeners haven't already had a chance to check out the gameplay video that's out there, I highly recommend it. Curious how you connected with your composer and sound designer and what that experience was like.
So the song was done by Almut Schwacke. She's our sound designer and musician. And of course, also we met her through like the game jams, and we did like at least two or three games together before we teamed up for Tentacular. And 2 years ago, we were like, oh, we need a trailer for the game. You know, nobody has seen it and we want to start sharing a bit about it. And we said, hey, here's like a little, like we just captured some clips from the game. Can you make a song? And, and since we're both like 80s music, I said, hey, just, you know, the could like some synth pop thing. And she just, it was just some hours she made the song, you know, just, it was really quick.
Oh, wow.
Hey, this is the song. And I was like, okay, yes, this is great. This is perfect. Let's use this.
What's your favorite part of the game, personally? That may be a tough question.
Yeah. I sometimes get lost in just tinkering with things, you know, because there can be little really nice chain reactions, you know, like you slap a car and then the car starts to burn, it drives to the city, the car explodes, and some other, like some character gets like launched off in the air, is crying something. It's just all these little accidents, which was always what we were aiming for, you know, like a little world that feels somehow alive and reacts to what you do. And then those little people talking, like making little remarks and but then also there's moments of friendship and warmth in the game, especially when the tentacle, the monster, talks to its sister. Also these moments I really enjoy, you know, when they interact with each other, right on the start of the game, when she tells the beast, about their history. And like, I really enjoy these little moments. You know, it's a comedy game in a way, you know, there's like lots of fun, but then also there's these moments of, like, oh, you're my friend, I like you, you know, you're my family, and things like that. So I like this mix.
That reminds me a lot of Octodad, actually, like the over-the-top kind of comedic aspect of it, and the puns, obviously, that are throughout, and the kind of flailing mechanics of using your tentacle arms. But then there's also these really touching, poignant moments between you and your family. Really nice.
I really enjoyed playing like the co-op version with my son, and it's also obviously it's like it comes to mind if you think about a game with an octopus or a kraken, let's say.
Yeah,
it's definitely an inspiration in the sense of that it's possible to do a game, you know, about an octopus that's living with humans.
Curious, as an indie developer, especially someone who has such an interesting background in photography and working as part of a PR firm, just curious what advice you would have for another indie developer who's looking to break into the industry, or a game developer who's looking to start building for VR. Any tips or pointers that you would offer?
I feel that the usual advice is make something. Like create something,
right.
Show it. I mean, it's honestly, I guess it's the best. That's the best thing you can do, right? I mean, if you create something, if you build something, and you show it to people, and you'll have a chance to maybe work further along that line or to secure funding. Create, show it to people, iterate, and keep going. I mean, like I said, I started the game to get away from a very businessy. Background, and also not wanting to be in like a bigger structure again, because I felt that when I was working at the agency that I got further away, you know, from producing things. And so I wanted to work hands on projects again. But yeah, that's an off ramp. You have an idea, you create something, you show it. That's the loop. Yes. And then you hopefully find the right people that will help you along the way.
So we covered a lot of ground. Is there anything, any parting thoughts that you wanted to share? Anything we didn't get to cover?
Right now, I just really hope that a lot of people, of course, have a look at the game, try it, and enjoy what we've been working on for such a long time. We poured a lot of heart into the game. There's a lot of love to detail. There's little things you can do, you can look at, you can discover things. I really hope that people will feel what we poured into and will enjoy the experience.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Simon. I really enjoyed speaking with you. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
I really love getting to chat with Simon, hearing about his background from photography and working in PR, and then ultimately following his passion into game design and development. Just a really fascinating guy.
Yeah, it's a bit of a roundabout way to get to where you're meant to be, but it seems like he really enjoys what he does now. And if you haven't looked up footage yet of Tentacular, highly recommend it, because it's a game that really pairs well with the visuals. The art style is super whimsical and colorful and silly. And it's one of those games where I feel like you could describe it on paper, and depending on your word choice, it would sound either like a horror game or like a really weird, silly game. It's definitely the latter.
Yes, yes. He's a gentle giant, the tentacled creature of Tentacular's titular fame. So definitely worth checking out. It's coming out really soon. All right, so now it's time for Jaloza versus Jagno, where we each get 1 minute to make our case on a chosen topic.
For this episode, we're keeping the giant monster theme going to debate about which elite tier Monsterverse protagonist we would most like to be reincarnated as in a future life, either King Kong or Godzilla. I'll let you go first.
Okay, so newsflash, woman cold. I'm going to go with King Kong because I could not possibly be a cold-blooded animal. It just would not work out for me. I think in keeping with the gentle giant theme, King Kong, he just has a little bit more humanity as a primate. So if I was going to be reincarnated as one over the other, I think that would be where I would lean. Going back to his historic roots, hanging off of the tower with the woman in his arms, it's they're almost star-crossed lovers in a way, so definitely empathize with him for that. Also, you know, my kaiju jam is usually more in like Cloverfield or Pacific Rim, so this is outside my realm of expertise, but my knowledge of King Kong is a little more in depth than Godzilla, so would have to go with King Kong.
Good choice, can't fault it.
All right, your turn.
Okay, even though King Kong does predate Godzilla by about 20 or so years, if my math is correct, I'm going to have to say King Kong, or I'm sorry, I misspoke. I'm going to have to say Godzilla is the one that has more appeal to me. You know, he has the name as the King of Monsters. You know, that's kind of his sort of his moniker. Everyone knows him as, you know, the ultimate beast that can slay anything and can beat anybody. In the movies, he's often depicted as sleeping beneath the ocean, kind of hibernating, waiting for his moment to come alive. And he's only really ever come alive whenever someone that's able of challenging him approaches. And as far as I'm concerned, in all of the recent movies, he's pretty much undefeated. So Godzilla is incredible. The giant beam that erupts from his throat can destroy anything. And it's just such a sight to behold, so powerful. His roar is, you know, earth-shattering. And he actually spends most of his time protecting humanity, so I think Godzilla is the best one.
All right, well done.
Well, now you know what we think, so it's your turn to tell us what you think. Head over to our Facebook group or over on Twitter and vote on which elite tier Monsterverse protagonist you would most like to be reincarnated as in a future life, either King Kong or Godzilla. And let us know what you think about the show on Twitter at Other Gaming Pod. Over on the Facebook group, we recently asked you, what is your favorite anime? We got some good answers. I recently restarted rewatching Dot Hack Sign, which is where the question kind of came from. I've been going through a bit of a old school metaverse kick, watching Dot Hack and the new Matrix movie and all those things. So I asked everyone about their favorite anime, and David R. said a long list. He had a ton. Berserk, Record of Lodoss War, Vampire Hunter D, Ninja Scroll, the movie, not the series, Magical Shopping Arcade, Abenobashi, Animation Runner, Kurami, Bleach, Gogo 13, Fist of the North Star, Gundam 00, and Castlevania.
Quite a list.
That is a long list.
But a quality one, for sure. Roderick L., he said, the devil is a part-timer. Satan gets bored of hell and decides to go to Earth and work part-time in McDonald's instead, which is pretty hilarious.
I can honestly say that I've never heard of it. I've never seen it. And I really want to watch it now after that description.
My comics and graphic novel interests tend to lie much more on the Western side of things versus anime and manga. So
sure,
I'm not as familiar with most anime series, but that sounds like one I really want to check out.
Yeah, going back to what David recommended, if, you know, like you said, you're more of a Western animation and graphic novel fan, check out Castlevania on Netflix. It's technically an anime because I think it's produced by a Japanese studio and it's based on obviously the Japanese mm-hmm. game franchise, but it's a very Western style animation. It's excellent, excellent series. It's very gory.
Okay.
So I will tell you that. It's not a cartoon for the kids to be around, but it's good very
morning.
Good.
I was
good.
Going to say I would binge watch that next, but we'll do that without the kiddos around.
Yes, yes. All right, before we go, I would like to drop a quick live streaming hot tip from my fellow content creators out there. Just a few little tricks that you may not know about. First is if you're a Facebook gaming streamer, then you may know that you can't really use chatbots easily on the platform unless you're a partner, but there is a free one called Noxbot. If you go to noxbot.gg, it has a lot of really cool features that are all free to use. Some examples of things that I use on my stream is if you type, for example, !Dreamcast, it'll give you a list of every Dreamcast game that I own. So I use that in my retro stream so people can pick what I play without having to recite, 30 plus games off the top of my head, which can get really annoying and cumbersome. Another example is you can do giveaways with it. So you could tell your chat to type in, whatever keyword you want, like say !giveaway or the word giveaway or, whatever. And you can tell the bot to look for everyone that said that keyword and then pick a winner randomly. And so it's a super cool, pretty powerful chatbot. It's all free too. Another one is Wondershare Filmora. It's a video editing program that's really cheap. It's a one-time fee. You don't have to pay a subscription. Very, very easy to learn. So highly recommend that for editing down gameplay clips. And finally, if you have some spare cash, I definitely recommend a Stream Deck. These are little plastic doodads that have buttons on them. It's like a macro keypad basically, but you can customize it with the software to do pretty much anything you could ever really imagine. You could have it turn on the lights in your room. You could have it, I've got one that pulls up my logo animation on my stream. I've got one that changes my scenes. There's all kinds of things you can do with it. Finally, a quick shout out to Level Up VR over on Facebook Gaming. It's a really cool up and coming streamer. They do tons of gameplay videos every single week, lots of new releases. So definitely worth checking out if you like VR games.
Well, awesome. What are some of the titles that Level Up VR has been playing recently?
The go-tos are obviously, the regulars mm-hmm. like Beat Saber and Population One, Contractors, all the shooters. But pretty much any big major new release, they typically will showcase at least one or two times, doing impression videos and stuff like that, which is great.
Oh, very cool. Maybe they'll be playing Tentacular soon.
maybe, perhaps, yeah. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us on That Other Gaming Podcast from Meta. Remember that we would love to hear from you and connect with you over on our Facebook group. And also, please do follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Other Gaming Pod.
The show is produced by LWC. Cedric Wilson is our lead producer and composed our theme music. Kojin Toshiro also contributed music. Jen Chien is executive editor. That Other Gaming Podcast is executive produced by Michael Kirkland and Juleka Lantigua. Art by BJ Prima.
Thanks for listening.